We are in Genesis chapter 20, telling the story of how Abraham spent a little bit of time in Gerar, which was a city down near the Mediterranean coast, the important part of what this city is related to is that it controls the drainage basin that the city of Beersheba is going to be established upon. And so that's why this story is so important. But you know how Abraham followed through with his usual, apparently, cover story that anywhere he went that he didn't know the people, he talked about Sarah being his sister rather than his wife, because he thought that this would delay any possible action against him in order to take her as a wife by one of the locals, because she was so beautiful. But it backfired in Egypt, and it backfired here at Gerar, because the king at Gerar didn't ask permission. He just made an assumption and took Sarah into his household as the preparations, the waiting period for the marriage got underway. But eventually, God steps in and lets Abimelech know that the reason why there are troubles in his country, which we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, is because of Sarah being his intended bride. And so Abimelech makes it right. He does get after Abraham a little bit, saying, why'd you do this? Why did you lie? Why did you tell this story? And I'd have to say, in all honesty, Abraham's response to that is kind of weak. Basically, I was afraid you guys would kill me if you wanted her and she was my wife. He should have trusted God more, and he should not have made such assumptions about people he did not know. Regardless of all that, let's finish the story up today. Genesis chapter 20, verse 14, it says, Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham and returned Sarah, his wife, to him. So this is kind of an apology offering. It is a let's make things right offering, because in Abimelech's mind, he had slighted Abraham by taking his wife and intending to marry her, even though he had assumed she was his sister. And then he says, verse 15, behold, my land is before you, dwell where it pleases you. Now that's interesting, because last time that this type of story happened, Abraham was taken to the border of Egypt and told to go away. This time, he is told by the king of Gerar, all right, why don't you pick a place in the drainage basin of my stream and you can set up shop there. That can be the place where you graze and water your animals. And then to Sarah, he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Notice he keeps using that term brother rather than your husband here. I've given him 1,000 pieces of silver. This is long before coined money. So these are little chunks of silver, perhaps little mounds of silver. Eventually, they will settle down to a certain weight for each of these chunks, before they ultimately start striking them into a coin shape. And that's where shekels are going to come from. So I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. which is a really big bunch of silver. We can't be absolutely certain how much silver is. If it is, each one of them, about a shekel of weight, then we're talking about the buying power of 2,000 days' wages. So that is a ton of money. And so this is another apology offering. He says, it is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone, you are vindicated. So it is his way of saying, you have nothing to be ashamed of. You did nothing inappropriate. It was all on me and on Abraham. You are pure. You are sinless in this affair. And this is important because Sarah is going to become pregnant with Isaac right around this time, or may already be pregnant with Isaac right around this time. And so it needs to be exceptionally clear that Abimelech couldn't possibly be the father of Isaac. And so this is testimony along those lines. And it was also physically impossible because, let's read the next part. Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech. Remember that we started with God coming to Abimelech in dream and saying, you are a dead man. So there was something wrong with him. So God now heals Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children. For he who is had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And I told you at the beginning of this story, I believe that God caused Abimelech and probably all the other males in this community to have erectile dysfunction. And none of the women were getting pregnant because none of them could get pregnant. And that this tells us the story was going on for a little while. And then God said, hey, this is the reason why you got your problem. It's because you have another man's wife, and that man is a prophet, and you need to make things right, and then he will pray for you, which is exactly what happens here. And once Abraham prayed for Abimelech, everything cleared up, not just with him, but with everyone in his community. And they were able to start getting pregnant and having children again. And I even suspect that the animals within the kingdom had been affected by this curse sent by God. And we will come back to Abimelech in a later story. But now we come to the climactic story that we've all been waiting for, and that is for God to keep his promise that Sarah would become pregnant. So Genesis chapter 21, verse 1, then he who is visited Sarah as he had said, and he who is did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived. So she gets pregnant right around the time of this story that we just finished, and she will have the baby exactly when God said it was going to come. That was about a year after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And we're pretty certain that Abraham and Sarah came to Gerar right after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So the last story may have been roughly 3 months in the making. But now let's go to the birth. So she conceived, and then she bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. So right on schedule, the year after, 12 months after, but in the same season, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the baby arrives. And in obedience to what was said to both Abraham and Sarah, he gets a special name. Verse 3, Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Yitzhak. Isaac, Yitzhak, is built off the word for that snicker, that catch in the throat that both Abraham did when he was told that Sarah was going to get pregnant at 90 years of age, and which Sarah herself laughed behind the tent flap when God said to Abraham that she was going to get pregnant and have a baby the next year after. And so God said, well, from now on, that is going to be memorialized in his name, the little snicker sound that you made. So he was named Chuckles or Laughter or Snickers or something along that line. Verse number 4, and Abraham circumcised his son Yitzhak when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. So that was part of the covenant of circumcision that was handed down about, I think it was 13 years, 14 years earlier, that every baby boy born from that moment on within the family of Abraham needs to be circumcised. Just have a little snip of the skin off of the male sexual organ. And the eighth day is the perfect day for that because the bleeding is going to clot up fastest on that particular day. And from that time forward, every one of these Hebrew boys are going to grow up seeing that change that is different than any of the other people around them, right there in front of them as a reminder that I and my descendants are different and we owe allegiance to the God who was, is, and will always be. So that was the point of the circumcision. And so here is Yitzhak receiving that symbol, that mark, on the eighth day of his life. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Yitzhak was born to him. And that would make Sarah 91 whenever baby Yitzhak was born. And that means that they've been in the country of Canaan for 25 years now. 25 years. And God has now kept his promise. Verse 6, Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. So she's wanting to go with the happy connotation of the name rather than the snickering connotation that she originally had whenever she reacted to God's promise. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Well, God did. I mean, that was intended to be a rhetorical question, as in nobody would have imagined that Sarah, the postmenopausal, never had a baby wife of Abraham, would be able to have a baby nursing. But here she is. And God said it all along that this was going to happen. Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. Then the child grew and was weaned, which means that once he gets old enough to, well, he's got some teeth and he's able to, you know, stand and walk a little bit, maybe even communicate very basically, then he needs to start not just simply eating solid food in addition to mother's milk. he needs to be getting off of mother's milk and be completely on the solid food. It's typically going to be attached to the third birthday that this has been accomplished by. And there, I believe, is some indication that the third birthday became the feast of weaning. And I attach that to the fact that the sacrifice made at one such feast was of an animal 3 years of age. And so I think that the two probably go together. And so that's the reason I believe this story is kicked off by Isaac's third birthday. So Abraham made a great feast on the day that Yitzhak was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. Now this is where we need to pull in some New Testament teaching, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I want to set the stage here first. Isaac is like probably 16, I think, at this point, 15 or 16. And he has been raised up to this point as the heir apparent of Abraham. Remember that Hagar was the surrogate for Sarah to have a baby with Abraham. That's how she had suggested it, is I'm going to give you opportunity to impregnate Hagar, my servant, as your secondary wife. She'll have a baby on my behalf, and that baby will be legally my son with you, Abraham. They thought that they were helping God out. They were mistaken. And so Ishmael has been raised as the heir up until the pregnancy and subsequent birth of Yitzhak, who is of the body of both Abraham and Sarah. And that becomes pretty obvious, I think, in the conversations and interactions during the 9 months of pregnancy and during the couple of years of Yitzhak growing up from infancy into toddlerhood and moving into that time when he's going to start being raised as the heir of Abraham. Now, how do you think that made Ishmael feel? He would have been kind of upset, wouldn't he? Would have been kind of feeling dismissed and underappreciated, maybe even cheated. And so he, as a teenager, seems to turn some of that frustration and, well, let's be honest, probably anger toward his half-brother at his birthday party, at his weaning party. And it says here that he was laughing at him. Guess what the word is? You got it. It's the same word that has that idea of the catching in the throat. In this context, it seems to be he was making fun of him, perhaps making fun of his name. So little Chuckles is going to be the heir of the tent city now. That sort of thing is apparently what was going on. And Sarah saw it, and it ticked her off. Verse number 10. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Yitzhak. So that's the reaction. Now, those of us who have studied this from the very beginning, we can appreciate there's realness going on here, but we can also be a little bit upset with the attitude of Sarah here. After all, it was her idea all along to have Abraham have a relationship with Hagar, have this baby boy born, be her son legally, Abraham's heir. And so she is a prime mover into how things came to this point. And now she wants to erase out of the picture the young man that she's been treating as her own son for years, and to remove the woman that she recommended as surrogate out of the picture. She wants him out of the picture. And it's all because of what she saw on this particular happy occasion. Before we go any farther in here, I want us to go to Galatians chapter 4. Because in Galatians chapter 4, Paul, who is trying to explain to the Galatians why Judaizing is such a stupid idea, that Judaizing meaning that Gentiles are forced to become Jewish in order to be saved by Jesus. And it was a heresy. It was a false teaching. And one of the things that Paul does is in chapter number 4, he tells an allegory about two women. One is free, that's Sarah. The other one is a slave, that would be Hagar. And how they represent two covenants, the old covenant, the Mosaic covenant, versus the new covenant, the Jesus covenant. And which one of them is to be embraced? Well, the answer is Jesus covenant. And so in his description of these two women, he says in verse 28, Galatians 4:28, "Now you brothers," meaning you Christian brothers, "like Yitzhak, are children of promise. But just as at that time he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, so also it is now." So basically, he goes back to the book of Genesis and says, Yitzhak was having a hard time being given to him by Ishmael. Ishmael is the son of the flesh. Yitzhak is the son of the promise. And he says, just like back then, we've got the flesh-focused people, the Judaizers, giving the promise-focused people, the Gentile believers in Jesus, a hard time. Verse 30 of Galatians 4. But what does the Scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit with the son of the free woman. And then Paul makes this application in his argumentation in the book of Galatians. So, brothers, we are not children of the slave, but of the free woman. So, basically, we are not of the flesh, we are of the Spirit. We're not of the law, we are of the salvation that is in Jesus. And no matter how much they want to persecute us and give us a hard time and laugh at us in derision, we're the ones who are the heirs. And they have been pushed off to the side. So that's his application from the story in Genesis 21 that we're reading right now. And so from that, it's pretty obvious that Yitzhak was getting a rough time from his big brother. And when Sarah saw it, she blew up. She went to Abraham, says, I want that woman and her kid out of this encampment because he is not going to be an heir. Not going to be it. Which upset Abraham. It says in verse number 14, the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. So he was upset that Sarah was immovable on this. I want them gone, Abraham. I'm serious. And Abraham didn't like the idea of having to break that personal daily interaction relationship up. But what happens? Verse 12, God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your offspring be named, your seed, the seed promise. So God basically says to Abraham at this point, Abraham, I know this is tough, but I need you to understand, you should go ahead and go along with what Sarah is demanding here. Focus on Isaac. He is the son of the promise. And through him, the seed of the promise is coming. However, God also says this as we're wrapping up today. Verse 13, and I will make a nation or an ethnic group of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So just because they're going to go and live somewhere else doesn't change the fact that he's your boy. And I promise you, Abraham, I'll take care of him, and I'll make something special from him.